A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Lee Williams from the Second Amendment Foundation's Investigative Journalism Project. Lee has been writing quite a bit about the case of Patrick Damiak, but we're also going to be talking about something else that Lee has been covering. That is the purchase. We don't know how many suppressors have been purchased by the ATF, but we do know that the ATF has made a number of purchases of some fairly pricey suppressors, about $1,300 a piece. And they are saying that these purchases were made for the, quote, health and safety of the agents, which, okay, if that's the argument, then why is it such a hassle and such a lengthy process for everyone else to have those same health and safety benefits by purchasing a suppressor, right? And there is news on that front. The National Rifle Association sending out a statement on Monday afternoon saying that the House Ways and Means Committee's proposed budget would zero out the $200 tax on suppressors that is included as part of the National Firearms Act. Now, suppressors would remain NFA items under this budget proposal, which is weird to me. I mean, if you're going to get rid of the tax, get rid of the registration requirement too. Not sure why they didn't go whole hog on that, but the NRA is encouraging members to contact their Congress critter and urge them to support the full removal of suppressors from the NFA as part of this reconciliation bill. Now, remember, with the reconciliation bill, it doesn't take 60 votes in the Senate. It just takes a bare minimum majority in both the House and the Senate, and the language within this reconciliation bill then becomes law. So this is a huge opportunity to undo not the entirety of the NFA, but at least undo one of the NFA's provisions. And it sounds like there's, you know, a lot of negotiations taking place on all kinds of measures within this mega bill. So the potential that the language proposed by the Ways and Means Committee can be changed to address the concerns of Second Amendment supporters, it still exists. But we've got to be making some noise right now about, ironically enough, about suppressors. Anyway, we'll talk more about this. In fact, let's get started with our conversation with Lee Williams from the Second Amendment Foundation. Take a look and a listen. Lee, it is good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the program, sir.
My pleasure. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I really appreciate that. And but I got to tell you, you are writing about some really interesting topics at the Gun Writer here. As I mentioned in your introduction, you've been doing incredible work covering the case of Patrick Tate Damiak and the railroading that he has received that has resulted in a 20-year prison sentence. And I would encourage folks to check out every one of your articles about this, because there's even now there's some new information that's being uncovered here.
Right. We took his case apart piece by piece and went through everything that he's been charged with. And as you can see, the latest edition shows these are nothing. These are things that you could own legally. You can buy them without a background check, without any paperwork. Yet for him, they resulted in a 20-year sentence.
And to date, I mean, we've seen the Trump administration and the Trump DOJ in a number of cases, you know, tell judges, hey, listen, we want to pause for 30 days. We're reevaluating our position. Has there been any sign, because Tate Damiak's been convicted, right? I mean, he's now in the appellate process.
He is serving his 20-year sentence. He's 3 years into it. He's got 17 years left. He has appealed. But the thing about the appeal is, I mean, I talked to him about it. He says he feels like he goes to court once a year on an appeal. It's sad, bro. I mean, this kid, if you look at him and you look at what he was willing to give to this country, right now he'd be leading a SEAL platoon, which is just maddening.
Do you know, Lee, I mean, has there been any attempt or effort to bring this case to the attention of Donald Trump for clemency, for a pardon, for you know, a commutation of his sentence at the very least?
Well, he should be pardoned. Right now,
I agree.
There are some in the works. The only one that's public right now is Rick Scott, who is our senator here from Florida.
Okay.
Doesn't have the best Second Amendment background as governor after the Parkland shooting. He took away a lot of rights, but hopefully, he'll do something and get this case in front of Trump's people. Because I went into this with the extreme caution, Cam. Mm-hmm. I wanted to check everything out. I wanted to trust my gut instinct. And there's nothing that we found that he did wrong. Not a thing.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, you talk to a lot of people who've been convicted and, you know, they're going to tell you, listen, I was innocent. And as journalists, you know, as you say, you've got to check out the story. You've got to make sure that, you know, what they're telling you is the truth. And sadly, that's not always the case. Right.
Right.
There are people who will try to use people like yourself to, you know, I don't want to say get away with their crimes, but to mitigate their offenses. But as you say, the more you looked into the case of a Patrick Tate Adomiak, the more concerned you were. And I mean, when you know, listen, you're a careful guy, too. You are a careful journalist. When you use terms like railroaded, by the ATF, when you say that, you know, the ATF has put an innocent man behind bars for possessing things that are perfectly legal to own. I mean, you're not just throwing out those accusations wildly.
I look at the Sten submachine gun toy that he had, which you can buy online right now, shipped to your home, a couple $100, made in Spain. They took a real Sten barrel and a real Sten action and kind of globbed it all together. They couldn't get the magazine to fit, so they were able to load one round in the real Sten action and get to shoot out of the real Sten barrel, even though he had a toy, and they called it a machine gun. I mean, it's crazy what they did to this kid.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely nuts.
And again, this is why I think what you're doing with this case is so important. And I really appreciate your coverage. And I know that it's going to continue in the future. But I won't say today's topic is as nuts as that, but it is pretty interesting. So you've had a couple of pieces talking about the ATF's purchase of suppressors. And we don't know how many suppressors were purchased, right? But this was for a particular a team or division within the ATF. Is that right?
Yeah, kind of. I got some pictures sent by somebody. They're from an ATF Association Facebook page.
Okay.
And they showed the guys standing on a line at 15 yards, shooting their suppressors really tactically. And a couple guys said, you know, they're from the Hux Works Safety Company there, which I looked up, they're about $1,300 a piece, non-government price. One guy said they're upper level, and another guy said they're good cans. So I sent an email, and I called ATF, fully expecting not to be, that they wouldn't respond. They have not, the ATF has not responded to me, Cam, for like 10 years. And I get an email saying from their one of their sources, one of their media folks, who says, and I quote, "We can confirm that our suppressors were provided to qualifying agents in the criminal investigation series 1811 for health and safety due to the extensive training and quarterly firearms qualifications they must complete. For operational purposes, ATF does not comment on specific firearms used nor number of firearms held." Well, the health and safety, they were provided for health and safety. That really stood out, man. I mean, really? That kind of got everybody that read it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, it was like a bomb going off. I'll be honest. It was like a bomb going off among my readers. And rightly so, because, you know, those of us who aren't in the ATF are treated differently if we want to have the health and safety, watch our health and safety. We have to pay $200, do some fingerprints, submit a federal application, jump through legal hoops just to purchase a single can or suppressor or silencer, whatever the hell you want to call it. One reader pointed out that these safety devices for the ATF are considered a privilege for those of us who aren't ATF agents. And brother, he's 100% right. So the theme went, doesn't the American public deserve the same level of health and safety that ATF agents receive? As far as their quarterly qualifications, that's only shooting four times a year, bro. I mean, I shoot a lot more than that. I'm sure you do too.
Absolutely. And, you know, and again, I mean, if the argument is health and safety, okay, great.
Yeah.
But as you say, what about for the rest of us, right? And, you know, we did see NRA put out a statement yesterday that the Ways and Means Committee in its a reconciliation proposal has a plan to zero out the $200 tax stamp for suppressors. But what's weird is that they're keeping suppressors on the list of restricted items. So one problem is addressed, but yeah, not every problem is addressed here with that proposal. You know, again, why can't we just have, you know, the Shush Act or the Hearing Protection Act language, which recognizes, again, that there is, as the ATF has recognized, that there is a health and safety benefit,
right,
to the use of suppressors. I would argue not only for the gun owner himself, but I'd say that, you know, this is also, in my case, Lee, it helps you become a better neighbor. You know, I live in rural America. I don't know how many of my neighbors shoot, but I've heard, you know, all around, at least four or five different directions. Most of the time, it's far enough away that doesn't bother me, kind of weirds out my Great Pyrenees. But my immediate neighbor to my west, he'll sight in his rifle and it's loud. I mean, it's a big boom and it freaks my dog out. Now, again, I'm not the type to be bothered by that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you and I have both covered these stories where somebody has a backyard range. It's perfectly safe, but the noise bothers people so much that they go to the county, they get some zoning ordinance, you know, in place. And all of a sudden, these backyard ranges are shut down. In some cases, existing ranges that are, you know, like clubs that have been operating for decades are told that they can no longer shoot because of the noise level. Yeah. So this is, to me, this is not only constitutionally sound, it is pragmatic, not only from a health and safety benefit, but again, just being a good neighbor. This helps us be good neighbors.
Couldn't agree more. I go back to my buddy, Bob Keller, who has Bob was incredibly ill in one of the most elite units, if not the most elite unit in the military. He's got a range. It's about an hour's drive. I'm a member. I wasn't there, but he said he had a platoon come in. So he's got 10, 15 Navy, active duty Navy folks online, and everyone's got a suppressor. Could you imagine being at an outdoor range and everyone has a suppressor? There wasn't too many guys wearing hearing protection because the goodness, the quality of the cans on their rifles. Mm-hmm. That's the way it should be. You buy a rifle right now, you get a padlock in there with a couple of keys. They should throw a can in or mount it permanently. It's not evil. We have to get over that whole, oh, it's only the hitmen need them. No, I've got 40% hearing loss in this year, having been shooting for, oh, I don't know, 50 years. Mm-hmm. And then being in the military, being in law enforcement. Can you imagine having shooters like us in their 50s and 60s with no hearing loss because every firearm they're shooting is suppressed?
Right.
It would be a dream. And the fact that the ATF recognizes this for quarterly shooting four times a year, it's crazy what you have to do to get a suppressor, what they're requiring us to do.
It is. But, you know, that statement in a way was a gift to gun owners,
yeah, really,
because it did put it front and center, right? And it makes the hypocrisy impossible to ignore. If suppressors are valuable for law enforcement because it improves their health and safety, then why, as you say, and as your reader said, what's different about the rest of us?
Right.
We
shoot more.
Exactly. Well, hopefully we will get suppressor reform in this reconciliation bill. I'd love to see suppressors removed entirely from the NFA. I mean, frankly, I'd like to see the NFA disappear, but I don't think that's in the cards for this reconciliation bill.
I don't know why. I honestly don't know why. I mean, look at the countries that we all talk about where you can buy them, you know, damn near in a 7-Eleven with a cup of coffee.
Right. I know. And I'm with you, because to me, if you're going to take this, you know, half step, and let's call it a compromise. All right, we're going to get rid of the tax, but we'll keep the registration requirements in place. Nobody's happy with that.
No.
The gun control groups aren't going to be happy with that. They're starting to say, oh, Republicans want to make it easier to have these deadly silent weapons. And groups like the NRA and others are going to say, well, why do I still have to register and get fingerprinted and all this stuff for something that is a mere accessory?
Right.
I think you're right. I mean, politically, if you're gonna make a move, go all in, man. I mean, I don't understand this half measure, honestly.
I don't either. We're starting to see too many of those coming out of DC.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. And I suspect, if nothing else, it's going to give us fodder for future conversations. Lee Williams, as always, my friend, thank you so much for coming on the show. It is so good talking with you. And I, again, just on behalf of my audience, thank you for all of the work that you're doing, because it is truly invaluable.
My pleasure, bro. Thank you.
You bet. Lee Williams joined us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks to Lee for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again very soon. And be sure to check out what Lee is writing about over at The Gun Writer. It's thegunwriter.substack.com. And again, he's got more information on the case of Patrick Adamiak, serving 20 years in prison because he says of the ATF's excesses. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Oakland, California. Here's the headline. Oakland man charged with gun possession after recent robbery and homicide. This is not the first gun charge for 27-year-old Maurice Heron. He was actually arrested on suspicion of murder after police identified him as a possible suspect in the April 19th homicide of 33-year-old Roosevelt Jones. Heron avoided murder charges, but has been charged with possessing a firearm that was found when police caught up with him on April 21st. Roosevelt Jones was allegedly shot and killed by the by his intended victim in what police say was an act of self-defense. Jones' 33-year-old cousin, Jassandre Upshaw, has been arrested and charged with murder under the theory that he contributed to Jones's death. Heron became a suspect, according to the Mercury News, because authorities located the robber's car in Hayward, California, hours after Jones was killed, and Heron's girlfriend was allegedly driving it. Heron was wearing an ankle monitor due to a pending gun case, and data from the device placed him at the scene of the homicide and at a hospital where Jones was dropped off, according to authorities. So while he has avoided murder charges for now, police believe he was at the scene of the crime. Sounds like this is maybe a placeholder charge while they try to assemble more evidence connecting him to the death of Roosevelt Jones. But as the San Jose Mercury News reports, on top of the new gun case, Heron's also charged with violating his probation from a prior burglary case. On April 30th, he posted $180,000 bail, was released from jail. So he's out. He's out. He has been convicted of 8 felonies since 2015 in California. He has been arrested 2 other times this year, charged with possessing a stolen gun in January. He was released from jail, and then he was arrested again on suspicion of possessing burglary tools in February. Now, again, keep in mind that Heron is 27 years old. He has racked up 8 felonies since basically the time he was eligible to be charged as an adult. And even when he is arrested, accused of violating his probation, being a convicted felon in possession of a firearm, nothing happens. Nothing happens to him. He gets a slap on the wrist. He is allowed to post bond. Probation extended, not revoked. He's not been returned to prison to serve out the remainder of his sentence because he cannot abide by the terms of his probation. No. This is a catch and release system there in California, and the revolving door of justice, frankly, in the case of Mr. Heron, is spinning fast enough that I'm surprised it's, if you could tap that, you could probably power a good portion of San Francisco just from the speed of the revolving door of justice there when it comes to Maurice Heron. So we'll keep our eyes on this case. I have a feeling that this will not be the last time that the Mercury News reports on Maurice Heron. Today's Armed Citizen story from North Carolina, where a homeowner fatally shot an intruder who was armed with an axe in Duplin County, North Carolina. The Duplin County Sheriff's Office responded to a home on Sunday morning where they say they found a man named David Bradley White, who was lying on his back at the bottom of some steps, suffering from a gunshot wound. Multiple gunshot wounds. He was pronounced deceased there at the scene. Sheriff's Office said in a press release that the residents of the home were confronted by a man who was armed with an axe who was trying to enter the home through the back door. And in response, the homeowners fired multiple shots through the door, striking the intruder. The Sheriff's Office did find an axe along with other weapons near White's body, as well as damage to the back door. District Attorney Ernie Lee was contacted by the sheriff's office after conducting interviews, reviewing evidence from the scene. It was determined that no charges would be filed. The good news is sometimes we wait months for that determination to be made, even when it seems like a really clear-cut case of self-defense. It is terrible that the homeowners were put in a situation where they had to defend their lives, but A, I'm glad they had the ability to do so, and B, I am relieved that they're not going to be, you know, sitting waiting on pins and needles for months at a time to find out what prosecutors are going to do here. And I expect we probably won't have any follow-ups to that story because I think the media has moved on, and I don't know that there's going to be much more to report. Finally, though, today's good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A woman in Alabama who was able to come to the aid of a teenager who suffered cardiac arrest while he was playing baseball. This was in Jefferson County, Alabama. Evan Tucker, 15 years old, loves to play baseball. His mom, Samantha, said she loves watching him play. Said he's tried out other sports, but he's always landed on baseball. It's always been interesting for him, and he has a lot of fun doing it. He had just finished his freshman year with the Pinson Valley High School baseball team, and he wanted to try out for a travel team. So Easter weekend, I guess he's either doing a tryout or he was playing a game. His mom said that he was standing near the outfield behind second base. She said, I thought he got hit by a ball because he just fell down. She said, I jumped up and I heard somebody say he's having a seizure, so I took off running. Well, as it turns out, Evan Tucker was not having a seizure. He was suffering cardiac arrest. Samantha Tucker says it was sheer panic, shock, actually. She said, I don't know what to do. I just kept talking to him. And then a stranger, quite literally an angel in the outfield, runs over and starts performing CPR. A woman's name is Jeanette Wilmot, also a mom. She said, I learned CPR in high school when I was 17. I've never had to use it in 40 years, she said. She was there at the ballpark to watch her 11-year-old son, Phoenix, try out for another summer league team. And when she saw Evan Tucker fall down, she ran over to him, was able to perform CPR for about 8 minutes before an ambulance arrived. According to WCJB, her knees rubbed raw as she hummed Staying Alive by the Bee Gees, right? And she just kept pumping. She said when emergency responders arrived, Tucker was taken away in an ambulance, his mom holding his hand. Samantha Tucker said the entire ride in the ambulance, I was saying, Jesus, I trust in you. I had a peace about me because somehow I knew he was going to be okay. His heart had to be shocked when he got to a children's hospital. He was in a coma for a few days. But he is on the road to recovery, according to WCJB. He's making improvements. He has been admitted to inpatient rehab. He has been able to walk without any help. He has regained his ability to speak. And Samantha Tucker is hopeful that her son will make a full recovery. She said, miracles happen. And if it hadn't been for Jeanette, if it hadn't been for the Lord, my son would not be here today. So both Samantha Tucker and Jeanette Wilmot are encouraging others to learn CPR because you never know when you're going to need it. Now, again, Jeanette Wilmot learned CPR 40 years ago. Never had to use it until Easter weekend, when she was in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save the life of a 15-year-old boy. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. But you don't have to wait until then to get the latest Second Amendment news and information. Just check out BearingArms.com. We've got you covered there as well. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. All you have to do, use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your membership. If you are a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member, you're going to get all kinds of exclusive benefits throughout the Town Hall Media family of websites, including townhall.com, Hot Air, Red State, Twitchy, PJ Media. It is a great value, all kinds of great benefits, but you will also be supporting the independent pro-segment of journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and we greatly appreciate that. So thank you. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe and be free.